Many of the measures dealing with guns appear to have stalled in the legislature this session, but the debate over guns continues in Florida's communities. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Kirsten Cooper. Members of the Manatee Tiger Bay Club recently held a debate on guns and gun control. Now highlights of that discussion. The conversation is moderated by Manatee Tiger Bay Club President Ben Bucker.
A lot of us hold a lot of strong feelings and opinions and views on all sides of this issue, just as far as general overall safety in regards to personal liberty and things like that. We will begin with Mr. John DeLuzio. Mr. DeLuzio has over 30 years of experience as an insurance businessman with executive management positions in administration, field operations, strategic business development, and claim technical areas. Mr. DeLuzio is a firearms enthusiast, a member of the Manatee Gun and Archery Club, as well as the NRA. Please welcome Mr. John DeLuzio.
Two words that have caused grief, travail, and other emotions are gun control. Those two words seem to be incendiary to the body politic in America. Campaigns use them as a fulcrum to run on, either for or against. And the one thing I think that everybody has to admit here is not to use anthropomorphism when it comes to firearms. Firearms are neither good nor bad. They are inanimate objects. The people who use firearms, on the other hand, can be good or bad. So the first thing I wanted to emphasize is a weapon, whether it is a shotgun, a rifle, a revolver, or a semi-automatic handgun, is neither good nor bad. Now, we all recognize the fact that guns by their very nature are dangerous. So there are certain laws that hark back to various legislation that's been passed in the United States. And what we're dealing with now is the Federal Firearms Act of 1968 that was passed, and it puts certain regulations into place. You have to have a federal firearms license to sell guns. You can't buy automatic weapons. You cannot walk out and have somebody deliver a weapon to your home. There are various regulations that have been implemented, and for the most part, very, very good regulations. If you go to buy a handgun today, which is the primary defensive weapon that you would use to protect yourself, you have to have a 4473 form filled out. You have to fill out half of it, and the firearms dealer that is selling you or transferring that arm to you has to fill out half of it. If you have a concealed weapons permit for which you already have had been fingerprinted, you can walk out with that gun then. If you don't, you have to have a 3-day waiting period. These laws are in effect now. Every wish list item that I have seen by those advocating gun control would have done nothing to stop any of the mass murders that I have seen over the past years here. Nothing. Zero. In fact, it's counterintuitive to me that when people are killed in gun-free zones because somebody doesn't agree that it's a gun-free zone, and usually a deranged lunatic, the reflexive action is to go after the law-abiding citizens and say, we're going to tighten gun restrictions on you who are buying them for self-defense. Does anybody here really think criminals go and buy guns legally? They get them on the black market. They steal them. There's numerous ways to get weapons that are not legal. Those people are not going to do anything about handing in weapons if somebody says, well, we'll just stop it. We'll just have every firearm collected. Does anybody really think that the gangs in our urban centers are going to surrender their firearms because they're told to? Well, why not just make murder illegal, right? That'll stop that, too. Somehow I think that's already illegal. That's just my opinion. The words gun control mean different things to different people. To me, it means that in many cases, it's an assault on our Second Amendment rights that allow us to defend ourselves about individuals who wish us bodily harm.
Our next speaker up is Mr. Dennis Maley. He is a featured columnist and editor for the Bradenton Times, an online daily newspaper serving the Manatee County area since 2009. His column appears Thursday and Sunday and deals with local, state, and national issues. Dennis is a former captain in the United States Army and a 1998 graduation of Shippensburg University, where he studied government and economics, and was a three-time All-American on the boxing team. Mr. Maley, welcome, and thank you for speaking.
I'm going to surprise you a little bit in that I don't disagree with a lot of what John has said. I am the rare person who probably has a lot of concerns about the gun problem and the rising incidence of gun violence in our country, but still disagrees with most of the quote-unquote gun-controlled measures that have been either proposed or passed. I agree with John in many instances that very few, if any of them, especially the ones that have passed, would have prevented the disasters that we've seen. However, there are several common sense ideas that have also been shot down where I think that as a society we would find commonality. Now, I'm someone who's handled guns. As was noted in my introduction, I was an Army officer. I fired everything from a pistol to a shoulder-holstered rocket-propelled grenade. I'm not uncomfortable with them. I don't own a gun. I don't keep one in my house. I've never felt the need to. I don't have a problem with reasonable, level-headed, rational, responsible people having a gun. I don't believe in collecting guns. I don't remember ever hearing of an American politician actually, you know, suggesting that we would round up the 400 million guns or so that are in this country, more than people. That's not on the table. But I think there is room for commonality. And what I like to talk about when we talk about this the serious issue is the actual data and the facts. Because when you look at it and you pare past the rhetoric on both sides, the ideological, and I'll be honest with you, I loathe getting into this subject in my column. And the reason is simple. Because you start with a reasonable premise and try to have an intellectual fact-based debate, and you are immediately overwhelmed by the zealots on both sides who tend to shout down the reasonable people in between to the point that they don't even want to hear. They close their ears and say, let's let the crazy people fight it out. I don't own a gun, and the reason is the data-driven responses I'm going to give you. Now, it's not lost on me the fact that, you know, I'm 6'3", 240 pounds, healthy male. People say, hey, Dennis, you're the heavyweight boxing champion of the Army. You've got a bunch of Golden Glove titles at home. You might not feel like you need to protect yourself the same way, you know, a 100-pound woman might. Completely true. However, when you look at the data, it's not the reason that I don't have a gun. The reason is, statistically, in your home, it is much more likely that a disaster is going to happen against you or one of your family members or a loved one than that you're going to protect yourself with a gun. That's just an irrefutable fact. When you look at it now, last year's data, for the first time in 60 years, more people were killed by handguns than they were by auto accidents. 6 decades it took for that to happen, because you have to go back to when autos weren't as popular. Since 2001, and I say this to give you some perspective, since September 11th terrorist acts of 2001, there have been more than 200,000 people murdered in this country with handguns. More than 200,000. More than double that in accidental firings and suicides. Since then, domestic and otherwise, there have been around 400 acts of what we call terrorism. All right, I'm talking all kinds of terrorism, mass shootings, only about 36 of which have had to do with Islamic terrorism. So when you look at that, and the reason I raise that is to ask you, does this seem indicative of what you see in the media and what you see of the issue in terms of which one we should be spending time and focus on and which one is more of a danger to you?
Our third and final speaker today is Chief Scott Tyler. He is the Chief of Police at the Palmetto Police Department. A longtime resident of Manatee County, Chief Tyler started his career at the Palmetto Police Department in 1995. He has held most of the positions at the department, including patrol and community policing officer, patrol corporal, and sergeant, SRO supervisor, detective sergeant, lieutenant, and deputy chief of police. Please welcome Chief Scott Tyler.
The fact of the matter is, there is no debate. The Second Amendment has been upheld. The Supreme Court has consistently ruled, including in the last 25 years, that not only do individual citizens have the right to bear arms, but individual citizens have the right to bear arms for lawful self-protection. Having said that, even though firearms possession and firearms ownership is considered a right under the Second Amendment, because of the lethality involved with firearms, our government and the courts have consistently upheld the ability of local and state government to do this, have tried to put some reasonable regulations and precautions upon gun ownership. For instance, and we won't get into the argument about restorative justice, but in all states, it is illegal for a convicted felon to possess a firearm, to purchase a firearm. It is also in Florida, the Florida Constitution also very specifically says that citizens have a right to bear arms and protect themselves. But Florida State Statute 790 has a proviso that habitual drunkards, people that are under, you know, habitually under the influence or being treated for addiction, cannot have concealed weapons permit. They cannot apply for and get one. People who are mentally incapacitated, people that have been under mental health treatment, they cannot. Now, there is a process that should some years pass and should an addiction counselor or mental health professional say that they're fine to have a firearm, they're allowed to get one. But we have reasonable laws in place to keep firearms from the hands of those that really would be dangerous with them. And for the most part, I would say, and from the position of a police officer, many of these laws work. Those that can lawfully hold a concealed weapons permit, those that can lawfully go into a business and buy a firearm, go to an FFL and buy a firearm, it works. The problem is, of course, the proliferation of firearms in our country and also the ability of people who otherwise could not lawfully get their hands on firearms to get them. We talk about common sense, reasonable laws that do not violate a citizen's right to lawful self-defense and possessing and carrying firearms, but place reasonable prohibitions, as our speakers have both talked about. One of the biggest things that I have an issue with is the lack of consistent firearms education. It may be argued that it's my right to carry a firearm, and as it's my right, you can't make me get training. You can't dictate what training I will have. But I would say a police officer carries a firearm every day. We train constantly with use of force decisions, lethality, firearms tactics, and weapons retention. The average citizen does not. This is a safety problem, and especially when we get into open carry. Firearms retention is a huge deal for a police officer. The average citizen does not train or probably even consider it. Probably the deciding factors in which holster to buy for open carry may not be which holster is more secure, but which holster looks the coolest or which holster matches. Now, granted, maybe I'm reaching a little bit, but I do have a concern about that. Many states do have prescribed courses of training for lawful possession and concealed possession of firearms. Florida does not, and I would like to see that changed. Whether it's law enforcement that does it, whether it's the State Criminal Justice Standards and Training Commission prescribing a training curriculum for law enforcement, for civilian carry, and not just tactical, not just weapons handling and safety, but also applying the law under stress, I think that that is something that we need to look for. In my experience as a police officer in Palmetto over the past 22 years, I have responded to few accidental shootings, but the ones that I have responded to were a lack of safety and a lack of handling. And quite honestly, it gets back to our right to carry and protect ourselves with firearms. Although it's not written into the Second Amendment, I believe implicit in that right is a responsibility and an obligation for each citizen to make an informed, responsible, educated decision about whether he and she are choosing to have a firearm in their life.
Thank you, Chief Tyler.
Coming up,
I have a question about stolen guns. Apparently, that's a really big problem, and that's how a lot of these crimes are committed, with stolen weapons. What can be done to help fix this? Would it help to have a computer chip put in every gun that is manufactured?
We'll hear audience questions from a recent Manatee Tiger Bay Club meeting on guns. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. A recent meeting of the Manatee Tiger Bay Club featured a conversation on guns and gun control. We go now to questions from the audience.
My question is, if at the time the Second Amendment was written, I think the most powerful weapon you could get was a musket. And the thing that concerns me as a person with a grandson growing up in a dangerous world and as a person who's actually not inclined to have a gun and have not ever had a gun, I don't understand why people have military-style assault weapons. I don't know why military weapons that are designed to kill a lot of people very quickly are necessary for self-defense outside of war. And Dennis, you may have some insight into that. But to me, that one of the biggest problems that I see is the more and more people that in open carry states do walk around with military assault weapons. I don't really understand how that correlates with the kind of society that we want to create. So I'd like you to comment on that.
I would say I disagree. The Supreme Court last upheld this in 2008. The ruling they're talking about is District of Columbia versus Heller. This was what is known as an originalist argument for the Constitution, which means that we apply it exactly as said, trying to understand what the framers meant. This is not historically how this has been applied to the Second Amendment or otherwise. I don't agree. I studied a degree in government. I don't agree with an originalist interpretation of the Constitution. I don't think it's possible to let the framers have the last words today. I just don't think it's realistic. We can't tap them on the shoulder and say, what did you mean by this? So it's always interpretation. And you're right. It's an evolving society. And it was dealing with militias. And it was dealing with a society that had a deep mistrust of standing armies. Right now, we have an enormous standing army. So obviously, we've changed. But when you get down, and I'm sure the other gentlemen are going to agree with me to some degree on this, when you get down to parsing what, there's no such thing as an assault weapon in terms of just a category. There's nothing that defines it. There are very, very few things that you can realistically split hairs over to say, well, you can't have this, you can't have this, that can't then later be modified anyway on the black market. So it gets very, very difficult to do that. But I do agree with you. The idea that people need, you know, basically hand cannons, you know, to protect themselves or their families, or certain kind of ammunition that is much more likely to guarantee death in a shooting, is seems to me nonsensical, and it does not seem like it leads to a more safe society. But I don't have an answer on how you successfully change that.
I would agree with much of that. When the framers first wrote the Bill of Rights, which was sort of a compromise document to get the Constitution running forward, we did have a much different society. And I spoke about the government's affirmed need to, with some sensible regulation of firearms. But I don't agree. And there are some local, Illinois, there was a case that came about in the Chicago area where a township decided that they were going to ban assault-type weapons. And I agree, there's no such thing as an assault weapon. That's a, you know, possibly even a media coined term that we've been throwing around for about 25 years. What we're talking about are weapons with high-capacity magazines, weapons that can fire a lot of rounds without being reloaded or can be reloaded quickly. And one of the issues, and this is nationwide, but it came to a head in one of the Chicago suburbs, can a local government regulate ownership of assault-type weapons, weapons with high capacities, long guns, AR-15-style weapons? And the court in that case said, yes, they can, because regulating types of weapons does not necessarily interfere with a citizen's right to bear arms and defend themselves. Now, personally, I have a problem with somebody telling me that I can't have a military-style weapon. First of all, what is a military-style weapon? In some countries, military-caliber weapons are outlawed. In other words, the Army uses a 9mm. Civilians cannot possess a 9mm weapon. Law-abiding citizens should have the right to be able to buy, purchase and buy and own and responsibly use any type of weapon that they feel. I mean, we're not talking about rocket launchers here, but I believe that. I have high-capacity weapons that I personally own. And the argument that somebody who doesn't need or somebody who shouldn't have that weapon may get a hold of it, I'm not really sure it holds a whole lot of water. First of all, my right to own that weapon, I think, is sacrosanct above the fact that somebody may get it from me one day. Second of all, we look statistically, and the data is very, it's very primitive, and there's not a whole lot of it out there. But I can tell you, talking to criminals in Palmetto that use guns for crimes, we asked them where they got the gun, and a lot of times, and this was also part of the CDC study that President Obama asked for a couple of years ago, basically they call it soft resources. Criminals, they do steal guns. They do steal high-capacity guns from law-abiding citizens, but the percentage is small. Most of the time, criminals get guns from acquaintances. Now, maybe they steal them. Maybe they borrow them. Maybe they have access to them in a relative's home, and they go and help themselves. But I really don't think the difference between me being regulated to a magazine capacity of 10 rounds versus 30 rounds, I really don't think it makes a whole lot of difference. If somebody's bent on killing, they're going to kill.
How many people in this room know what AR means? What do you think it? What do you think it means? What is it? No, it's not assault rifle. It's Armalite rifle. All right, an assault rifle is a fully automatic weapon. You switch the selector from semi-automatic, which means one pull of a trigger discharges one round. A military weapon is the opposite of that. You squeeze the trigger and 20 rounds come out. We do not have assault rifles that can be purchased legally today. All right? Many of the friends that I have AR, Armalite rifles, which shoots a 5.56 round, otherwise known as 22 caliber, for sporting purposes, for target practice, and for hunting. I see nothing wrong with having a weapon of that nature if you want to do that with. We all agree that weapons used for otherwise things that would be illegal is not proper.
What, in explaining to a seventh grader, or why explaining to a seventh grader, was the Second Amendment written? Why was it written, and for what, and how does it apply to today?
The Second Amendment goes back to 1791. And I don't think you can really understand the Second Amendment unless you understand the Third Amendment. Do we have any Third Amendment experts here? I bet most people don't even know what the Third Amendment stands for or says. Chief Scott probably does. It's the Quartering Act, where it is illegal for military to use your home for quartering. That was important back then because guess what the British did during the Revolutionary War with disastrous circumstances for the people who housed them. So the Second Amendment is a reflection of the Third Amendment, too. It means that the people in the United States, the citizens of the United States, have the determination for self-defense and, as such, have the right to bear arms for that purpose. Not offensive purposes, but as a defensive, save-your-life type of situation. So, one other distinction. Nobody I know who supports the Second Amendment is pontificating that anybody here should go out and buy weapons if you feel uncomfortable with them. Don't do it if you feel uncomfortable. But I find too many people on the other side of the issue who think that if they don't have a weapon, no one should have a weapon.
I would disagree mostly in that I don't know anyone that doesn't have a weapon that thinks no one should have one. I very, very rarely hear that argument, even from the most progressive liberal side of it. I have an 11-year-old, and we've discussed the Second Amendment ad nauseum. And when you look at it, it's 27 very awkwardly phrased words. It's not entirely clear. And that's where a lot of this problem is coming. When you look at the history of how it's been applied by our Supreme Court very differently. The old legal mantra of your right to swing your arm ends at my nose. I think that plays into this in the extent that when you have a society where there are more guns, more, and when you say well, listen, it doesn't include rocket-propelled grenades. Why not, right? If I have a shoulder-mounted anti-aircraft missile, would everybody in this room agree that I'm armed? Am I? Okay. But they infringe on my ability to be armed in that manner, right? And we infringe on another style of weapons. So the idea of infringement has been accepted to some degree. We can't just arm ourselves in whatever way that we see fit. So all of that is, again, taken from a time when we're talking about muskets, and it has to be applied to a modern society.
Hi, I'm Rose Lee Schaefer, and I'm a member. I have a question about stolen guns. Apparently, that's a really big problem, and that's how a lot of these crimes are committed, with stolen weapons. What can be done to help fix this? Would it help to have a computer chip put in every gun that is manufactured? Or what else could be done?
Stolen firearms do make their way into the hands of criminals. There is little data to suggest that that is a preponderance. As a matter of fact, as I said, in Palmetto, when we talked to criminals that are willing to talk to us about where they got guns, they weren't necessarily stolen firearms. So, you know, I think that is sort of a myth. Now, stolen weapons, yeah, they get on the streets and they get into the hands of people that don't need them. As far as what can be done about stolen firearms, chipping guns, things like that, I'm not really sure that would help. I think one of the problems that we do have is when you decide that you're going to exercise your Second Amendment right to get a firearm and to keep a firearm, you need to take responsibility for securing that firearm. Now, can we legislate common sense? No, we can't. But unfortunately, I see that as the bigger problem. As I said, most of the stolen firearm reports that we take are with people that leave the gun in the truck or in the car and leave the car unlocked, just like they leave their purse or their laptop in the car and leave the car unlocked. Or they may be stolen from a home where, you know, the firearm isn't secure. There's lots of people in and out. And, you know, I can't speak for Bradenton, Manatee County, or other jurisdictions, but that seems to be the way it works in the city of Palmetto. So, you know, unfortunately, we can't legislate common sense and we can't legislate responsibility, but it comes down to the individual gun owner.
And that's it for today's show. On an upcoming Florida Matters, we're taking a look at the Florida primary. We would love for you to weigh in with your thoughts on the candidates. We have details at WUSFnews.org. Just click on the Florida Matters link. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts with engineering assistance for this episode from Manatee Educational TV. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.